Affairs will come to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:00 a.m. committee clock time, 27th of January, 2005. Let the record also reflect that we've got a quorum. Present members are myself, Representative Olson, co-chair Representative Thomas, Representative Salmon, and Representative Newman. Today's meeting will consist of overviews by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development and the Alaska Marine Highway System. Commissioner Blatchford, would you like to lead off?
Okay to have coffee here?
Oh, certainly. And welcome to the committee.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Edgar Blatchford, and I'm Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and it's a pleasure here to be here today to talk about the department, which is a regulatory agency and also an advocacy agency. And to some extent, we promote ideas within the Division of Community Advocacy. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is to go through quickly and leave room for questions if you have any questions. We do have several of the directors here from the divisions, and they also would be available for questions. The mission of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and the department has gone through a process of evolution over the past 35 years. It was the Department of Economic Development at one time, and Governor Murkowski was the Commissioner of Economic Development. Then it became the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and there was a separate department called the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and I served as Commissioner of DCRA back in the early 90s under Governor Hickel. There was a merger between the three departments over the course of three decades, a Department of Commerce and the Department of Economic Development and Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Now we have this department, which is a large department in terms of responsibilities, but very small in terms of what the general fund contribution is. Our mission is to promote a healthy economy and strong communities in Alaska. We regulate through the commerce portion of the department the existing industry to protect the consumers and help create a stable business climate. Through the community aspect of our mission, we assist local communities with self-governance and sustainability questions. Through economic development, we coordinate and promote strong economic development growth by expanding or assisting in the expansion of new and existing businesses. We have six divisions and one office. The commissioner's office includes the Office of Economic Development, and we have specialists in that Office of Economic Development in tourism, mining, fisheries, film, and small business, and they have shared responsibilities. We have the Division of Admin Services, and Joellen Hanrahan is here this morning. We have Banking and Securities and Corporations at the Division Director's Mark Davis. We have the Director of Division of Community Advocacy, Mike Black, he is here. We have the Division of Insurance, and that is Linda Hall. The Division of Investments is Greg Winninger, he is here today. And we have the Division of Occupational Licensing, and that is Rick Urien. We also have six affiliate agencies that are closely affiliated with the department: the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, the Alaska Energy Authority, and Becky Gay from the Alaska Energy Authority is here today and to answer any questions. The Alaska Railroad Corporation, I sit on the board of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and we have the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. In addition to that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I serve on the commissioner is designated by law, serving as a good number of other boards and commissions, most of which, or a lot of which, I delegate to key members of the management staff. Depending on the issue, I will take the seat myself on these boards and commissions and represent the policy directions of the administration. We have 493 employees. We are located. We have offices in Anchorage, Bethel, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kotzebue, Nome, and TOC. There is a Seattle office, and that is maintained by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Our total budget was $125.4 million last year. $7.8 million of that came from the general fund. We are 0.3% of the statewide general fund. With the Division of Community Advocacy, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the director is Mike Black, who has at least a quarter of a century in dealing with issues in rural Alaska and with the organized municipalities. The Division of Community Advocacy is the heart and soul of the old Department of Community and Regional Affairs. And that mission was to promote, as it is today in this division, is to promote strong communities and healthy economies by providing technical and financial assistance, training, and other capacity-building resources. Recent examples, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, of what the division has done, including assisting communities with the bulk fuel issue that evolved through last session of the legislature. We provide on-site utility management assistance to 102 communities, and they're often or represented by 9 regional utility management classes under the RUBA program. We've partnered with the staff from the National Marine Fisheries Service to provide face-to-face technical assistance and information workshop to 29 of the 42 communities eligible to participate in the new fisheries program for the Gulf of Alaska communities, the Community Quota Entities Program, CQE. We've conducted the full value property tax assessment for 44 municipalities. The state's tax assessor is housed in the department. We've administered over $65 million in federal funds to rural communities or nonprofits for community development projects and services. We've implemented the local government online web-based information system to provide local governments technical assistance via the internet. That is often used by those folks interested in business opportunities, entrepreneurial activities in Alaska. We've updated and expanded the web-based community database, providing detailed information on 372 Alaska communities. And we continue to provide extensive support, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to the Local Boundary Commission. As we're all aware, the Local Boundary Commission was created by the state's constitution, and the department serves as staff to the Local Boundary Commission. We have also provided technical and financial assistance to the City of Delta, the Delta Junction Economic Development Council, to mitigate the impacts of the deployment of the missile defense system at Fort Greeley. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, they're members of the committee. Those are just some examples of what the department does in the Division of Community Advocacy. With the Denali Commission, we play a technical role and a resource role. Our representative to the Denali Commission is Cindy Roberts. She is with us today, Madam Representative. We support the mission of the Denali Commission. The statute describes the commission's purposes as the delivery of federal services of the federal government in the most cost-effective manner practicable by reducing administrative and overhead costs. As you probably are aware, the Denali Commission will be meeting here in Juneau tomorrow. The commission also provides job training and other economic development services in rural communities, particularly distressed communities, many of which have a high rate of unemployment that exceeds 50%. And in some cases, 80-85%. The Denali Commission also promotes rural development, provides power generation and transmission facilities, modern communication systems, water and sewer systems, and addresses other infrastructure needs. The primary Denali Commission programs support rural communities of Alaska in bulk fuel storage and energy system upgrades and primary care clinics. We try to incorporate the mission of the Denali Commission with the mission of the administration in creating economic opportunities for some of the most distressed communities in the United States. Many staff members in the Division of Community Advocacy are involved in the administration of annual grant programs through the Denali Commission, including multi-use facilities, the mini-grant program, community mapping, community plan, website maintenance, community plan checklist, and the bulk fuel bridge loan program. The department has executive staff assigned to the commission, and they assist the co-chair of the Denali Commission, Colonel Jeff Stacer, who just walked in, I'm told. I haven't seen him, but I'm told that he just walked in. With the Division of Investments, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and this is a division that plays a very key role in fishery activities in from Metlakatla all the way up the coast to the Norton Sound, the Chukchi Sea. The division promotes economic development through direct state lending within industries and areas not adequately served by the private sector. The division's programs were created by the state legislature, and they have their wisdom is the effectiveness of their wisdom is being felt today through this year, including the approval of 133 loans totaling $15.2 million. There are 114 loans, $6.5 million, to Alaska Commercial Fishing Harvesters in keeping with the intent of the Commercial Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund to promote a resident fishery. And that is very key to the Murkowski administration, local people for local opportunities. There were 10 loans, $7.7 million went to qualified nonprofit corporations to build and operate salmon hatcheries for other fishery enhancement activities. There are 8 rural development initiative loans totaling almost $800,000, resulting in the creation of almost 30 jobs in communities of 5,000 or less. Effort or a great deal of pride to the department is the volunteer tax and loan program, which assisted 5,800 individuals in preparing their tax returns, and this resulted in returns, federal refunds of $3.2 million that went back into the communities and, of course, circulated in those communities. A major success and probably one of the most successful federal state programs in the United States, to my knowledge, is the Community Development Quota System program. 6 CDQ nonprofits in Western Alaska use CDQ allocations to assist with the development of a sustainable fisheries economy. There's been a rapid growth of the CDQ assets and revenues. They provided over $100 million in employment, education, and training benefits since the program was created in 1992. The program was created with an investment by the state legislature, the state of Alaska, of about $250,000. And I like to mention a big supporter of that program was the late Ramona Barnes. CDQs have made significant investments in Bering Sea pollock, Pacific cod, and crab vessels and quota in 2004. We've assisted the communities with the Rural Bulk Fuel Assistance Program, working closely with the Denali Commission, with the Alaska Energy Authority, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know whether the Deputy Director of the Alaska Real Energy Administration, Mike Harper, walked in. But we upgraded, initiated, or completed bulk fuel facilities in 11 communities. The Energy Authority also upgraded or initiated power systems in 14 communities. Emergency responses in 8 communities. Circuit rider services were provided to 25 communities. $1.8 million was awarded through 12 projects through the Energy Cost Reduction Program. And the Power Cost Equalization Program also goes through the Energy Authority, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And it serves a total of almost 80,000 residents of Alaska, 181 communities, with 85 utilities. A major segment of the rural policy development efforts of the administration was the Fisheries Revitalization Program, initiated by Governor Murkowski. The Office of Economic Development, in cooperation with the Governor's Office, oversees the state's Fisheries Revitalization Strategy. This is a multi-tiered economic development program that used $50 million of federal funds to spur innovation and increase productivity within the depressed Alaskan salmon industry. Highlights include $27.8 million for three competitive matching grant programs with communities and industry, $7 million in direct aid to communities in FY04, $4.5 million to Alaska Seafood Marketing Board, and $750,000 to the University of Alaska Marine Advisory Program. We also play, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a role with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, RCA. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska awarded $4 million and received $7.5 million from the USDA Rural Development for Rural Alaska Internet. These grant dollars are available to implement and provide internet access to areas of rural Alaska that do not currently have services. The this program is key to the governor's initiative to generate economic activities through the marketing of traditional arts and crafts. Funding the pending dockets were reduced from 161 to 153. Banking, securities, and corporations, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, regulates the banks, the securities industry, and corporations. Last year, the SB 272 authorized the regulation of deferred deposits, often referred to as payday lending. These payday lending establishments are now regulated under state law. Effective January 1 of this year, the division has is undertaken the following efforts in the first 2 weeks of the program, the first 2 weeks of the payday lending program. Processed four cease and desist notices for payday lenders that are in violation of the new act. Processing four applications for licenses, and we're working with individuals for the establishment of payday lending establishments. To provide improved customer services for Alaska businesses, the Governor's Administrative Order 219 transferred the Corporations Program to the Division of Occupational Licensing from the Division of Banking, Securities, and Corporations on December 19th. This transfer will provide better service to the public by creating a single organization within state government for customers to form a new business entity, obtain a license, form a corporation, register a business name, and register a trademark. As I mentioned earlier, representing the Alaska Industrial Development Authority and Export Authority is Becky Gay. She's representing AEA also. She's here today. ADA funded $78 million in loans, an increase of 31% over FY03. ADA sold its interest in the Seward coal loading facility to the Alaska Railroad, sold its 49%. ADA, and it's a very competent, very dedicated staff under very, very good management. They negotiated a long-term operating agreement with Alaska Ship and Dry Dock for the Ketchikan Shipyard, and they accepted offers for the sale of the Alaska Seafood International property and for the Mark Arrow facility in Fairbanks. Sales will be completed this year. They've also issued $120 million in revenue bonds for the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. In passing, Mr. Chairman, the department is represented also on the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation Board of Directors. I'd like to say we've launched missiles, but not the department itself, but the corporation. Those missiles were successfully launched. They spent $11.6 million in Alaska in 2004, and they provided an equivalent of 45 full-time jobs in Kodiak and 16 jobs in Anchorage. Ray Ryuta is the head of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and we are beginning to see the positive effects of the marketing campaign, the national marketing program. Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, to highlight some of our initiatives in 2005 or 2006, with the loss of approximately 4,500 jobs in Southeast Alaska and Gulf of Alaska communities, the CDQ program, or the imitation of it, as close to an imitation as we could get, is the Community Quota Entity Program. We'd like to create seafood processing opportunities seafood harvesting opportunities in Gulf of Alaska communities. Under the CQE program, 42 communities are eligible to borrow money from the Division of Investments. That is a federal-state program. And we are looking at least to replace some of the jobs lost in Southeast Alaska and the Gulf of Alaska communities. We've received applications and from the City of Craig, the City of King Cove, the City of Sand Point, and the City of Yakutat and Kodiak Island communities are preparing applications for participation in this program, which will allow them to purchase shares of halibut and sable fish. The program is expected to have a significant positive economic impact on the Gulf of Alaska communities. But, of course, this rests upon the motivation and the ambition of the local community leadership. With the Fisheries Revitalization Program, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Department of Commerce will work closely with three other departments constituting, will continue to work closely with three other departments in state government constituting the Fish Cabinet. Three other departments include the Fish and Game and the Department of Labor. We are working with seafood development associations to create effective organizations for the process of fisheries development throughout Alaska, whether it's in the Aleutians, the Bristol Bay area, the Chulista region, or Southeast Alaska, or the Prince William Sound area. The Department of Commerce will continue to administer and report on approximately 150 existing grants totaling over $30 million. Of great interest to parts of Alaska, particularly the Norton Sound area and further west, is tourism promotion with cruise ships now venturing into the areas that were at one time seen as areas that were rarely visited. They will continue to be rarely visited. But we're working with the cruise ship lines in preparing communities for an expansion of opportunities in Norton Sound and in the Bristol Bay area and in the Chulista region. The Office of Economic Development has been holding workshops and with local communities on how to promote and take opportunities that come with the tourism industry. We're updating the Alaska visitor statistics to obtain valuable information that is used in marketing. And this information is absolutely critical, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, because the tour season here in Alaska is a very short, maximum of 120 days in some areas of the state, to as low as maybe 80 to 85, 90 days. We're working with the Alaska Tribal Industry Association to augment the national television campaign to reach consumers with Alaska's message. We do that online and with trips to major tourism areas in the United States. We're also, Mr. Chairman, working members of the committee with communities through a $300,000 competitive grant program from the Federal Economic Development Administration to assist 4 to 6 economic development distressed areas nationally, but that's just locally here in Alaska. It is an 18-month, $600,000 project providing regional clusters of communities with hands-on technical assistance in the form of tourism development workshops, regional marketing plans, or funding strategy development. Currently, we're working with Copper Basin communities and the Seward Peninsula communities. The staff is also working with the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, the Central Southeast communities of Wrangell, Petersburg, Kaufman Cove, and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta communities to refine their opportunities. I was in Anchorage yesterday, Mr. Chairman, a very quick trip to attend the board, and it deals with the Manufacturers Extension Program. This is an initiative of the governor to create opportunities for the native arts industry, arts and crafts, to develop an international market through the Internet. It is a federal program that we have taken advantage of, and we hope that this will provide much-needed cash in some of the smaller communities around the state. I believe, Mr. Chairman, this is the quickest, the fastest way to get cash in some of the most distressed areas in the United States, and that is through the sale of traditional arts and crafts over the international web. of interest to the legislature, and a presentation may be made later on this, is that the reauthorization of the ARDA program, the Alaska Regional Development Organization. There's 11 ARDAs, and these ARDAs, some of them are created where there is no regional governments. These ARDAs provide economic plans, and they support economic development opportunities for local people. This program was created in 1988, and it is effective in creating and sustaining strong local economies. In FY04, ARDAs used $620,000 in state funds to leverage $2.7 million in other types of funds. Quickly, and I'll go through a few of these, Mr. Chairman, the Local Boundary Commission. I'm very, very excited about what's happening in Alaska when it comes to the creation of local governments. There's all, from one end of the state to the other, there's discussions of detachments, annexations, and creations, and the Local Boundary Commission is a hardworking group of people. The department serves as staff to these efforts. And it is very pleasing to me to have so many, to see so many people interested in government throughout the state of Alaska. Where there's been a surge in mining activity interest throughout the state, whether the interior, southeast Alaska, or southwest Alaska, or northwest Alaska, the department continues to play a key role in working with the communities using our advocacy. Putting on our advocacy hat and working with the communities. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's these other boards, commissions, authorities that I serve on or the department is represented on, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. If I'm not able to answer the questions, then there are key members of the staff here who would be delighted to take your questions.
Let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Cisna. I've got one quick question for you. Given the involvement of your department in fishing and fishery issues, do you have somebody at the Board of Fish right now monitoring the Board of Fish hearings up in Anchorage?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know for sure, but I would not be surprised if we had someone there. Yes, we do. We have one person there who's in Anchorage. He's the CDQ manager. He is Greg Cashin. He's also up there for other business, but we do have people who pay very close attention to the activities of the Fish Board, the Game Board.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Blanchard, you'd stated that you work a lot with job training, the MEP, entrepreneurial opportunities. How closely does your organization, your administration, your agency work with other agencies within the state, such as the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, job training, local small business development, and community centers? Do you duplicate those processes, or do you work closely with those
companies? Mr. Chairman, to Representative Newman, we work closely. The governor has divided the cabinet into sub-cabinets. We are part of that sub-cabinet with the Department of Labor. I have some familiarity with some of the labor programs, some of those labor programs were in the old Department of Community and Regional Affairs. A major initiative of this administration is to avoid any duplication of effort or of services and to approach the problems we have and the challenges we have in Alaska in a coordinated fashion. And we follow the lead of the commissioner, the Department of Labor. And we work closely with him. He's a key player in all of our decisions, all of our policy developments.
Yes, I'd just like to state that as somebody who's been through some of the Small Business Development Center programs, developing business plans and such, long-range business plans, I found that very beneficial. So I hope that your organization would work with some of these companies to try and provide opportunities for some of these small businesses.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sussman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, my question is kind of, I've got a couple things that I'm really interested in. This last year, I visited 21 communities in South Central and Southeast, and was especially interested because of my personal interests in the how health was playing a role in the economic life of those communities, and I think, as you well know, it does play a pretty hefty part in the lives of communities. But what I hadn't expected was sort of the very strong role senior care and senior programs were playing, some of which have been created by the seniors themselves, and the seniors have appear to be sort of a very vital part of the sort of inner workings of anything that requires a committee or somebody who is willing to attend meetings and think. But also, what was being reported to me was the phenomena that that the welfare to work was being extremely successful, in part because of these workers and that kind of the home-based health people that seniors require, and some of those services. Do you ever, is there anything in the department that pays attention to that or plays a part in that kind of development?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Sisna, we pay attention to what is happening in local communities. We're always on the watch for what is successful. And one of the primary goals of the department is to reinstill the entrepreneurial spirit of Alaska. The entrepreneurial spirit was very evident, perhaps more evident and more successful before the time of the oil revenue dollars in the state legislature. And those folks who have a very close tie to the entrepreneurial spirit are the elders of the communities. They're the ones who engaged in the traditional entrepreneurial activities of gathering wood or coal, hunting, fishing, in-home industry, arts and crafts. Those are entrepreneurial activities and business activities, and that is what the department would like to be further engaged in. That is why the arts and crafts industry initiative by the governor is so important to us. But the department cannot be the leader in that. We can be a coordinator, and we have to look to the local communities to provide us with the leadership. And the leadership comes from the elders of the communities. So it is a major objective of the department and the administration is to engage with the elders of the communities, because they are the ones who still have, to a large degree, the entrepreneurial spirit, and that is what we need to re-engage our activities in.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Blanchard, you stated that your division has provided 133 loans worth $15.2 million. What was the default level on those loans, and what does your organization do to provide assistance to companies that you see that are close to default?
Mr. Chairman, if I might invite the Director of Investments to answer the representative's question.
Certainly.
This is Greg Winninger, and he's the Director of the Division of Investments.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Newman, our total delinquency rate right now is right around 14%. And we do have several programs in place whereby we work with individuals that are having difficulty. We have a soft collection program, which has been very successful, which essentially is geared up for catching something at the very early stages of a problem. We get a hold of people right away and start working with them. We have a loan extension program that we're very active with. We have a contract with the Alaska Business Development Center, and when we run into very serious problems, we have that organization intercede and help us. Basically, our approach has been foreclosure is a very last resort, and we do everything we can to try and find solutions to problems before that happens.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Winneker, do you take advantage of the senior small business development plan or the development plan programs that senior citizens provide to help businesses work on establishing those plans?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, we do not have any direct contact with that program. We have separate programs that we administer. We do probably work with some of the same people, but we don't have direct involvement with that program.
Representative Salmon?
Yes, I have a question. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Blackford here. Several years ago, the Denali Commission awarded some money for the villages up in the Yukon Flats area for the bulk fuel facilities. And so far, the last time I went on the campaign trip, I haven't seen any, you know, improvements since they established that money. But how closely do you work with Denali Commission on the bulk fuel facilities and the villages?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Salmon, the department has a staff person in the office in the offices of the Denali Commission. That person is Cindy Roberts. She is here with us today. We engage in conversation and policy development, strategic planning sessions on a very regular basis with the Denali Commission staff. Work as closely as we can with them, and I think that you know there's work that needs to be done, and I think the Denali Commission is doing an excellent job. You know, it's a large issue out there, a huge challenge for the people of Alaska, and we're making progress. And you know, bulk fuel, health care facilities, sanitation efforts, they're all big initiatives of the Denali Commission.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, good morning, Commissioner. I appreciate you and your staff coming here. As you went through your presentation, I see why I sit on CNRA. Because it is, I've been either directly involved or it touches every one of my communities. But in your starting comments, you said your budget's $125 million, you only get $7 million from general funds. Where does the rest come from then?
Mr. Chairman, I have the budget director, Joellen Hanrahan, here. Joellen, if you would like to go into detail on where we get our funds. We have business receipts, Mr. Chairman, you know, corporations, insurance receipts. We have and federal funds. And there are fees with occupational licensing. And Joellen, go ahead.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Thomas, the department's funding is 7% general funds, 19% federal funds, and 74% other funds. And those other funds are business license receipts, receipt supported services.
A lot of federal
funds. 19%.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple other ones, if I may.
Sure.
And Mr. Commissioner, during the LBC process, who transfers the land? You know, the other day we were kind of somewhat taken back by the amount of lands that were transferred and not being transferred, and who in the process, because I think one of the processes we want to see is who's in charge. I think the lack of lands being transferred, we want to know, and does it leave your department?
Mr. Chairman, to answer the co-chair's question, can I invite the Director of Division of Community Advocacy, Mayor Mike Black? There are several land programs in state government, and we're all aware of those programs. Some of those are, most of them, I suppose, are in the Department of Natural Resources. The department does have a responsibility with 14C3 lands, which is the requirement under the federal law, the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, that each community, Title 29 communities entitled to 1,280 acres from the village corporations. That is a key program in the Division of Community Advocacy. That's just one program, Mr. Chairman. And then, of course, you know, we have the Statehood Act, which requires that lands be transferred from the federal government to the state government, and there is a, I'm told, a backlog on that. And then there's programs. And the whole discussion of land transfers, Mr. Chairman, is very key to the discussion of creating a private tax base in Alaska, particularly in rural Alaska. And land policy, I think, is going to increase as we go further into this decade, where we go with the development of land policy. Mike, if you might address the question of land programs.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Thomas, I believe you may be speaking specifically about the land entitlements for newly incorporated municipalities, and if that's the case, we of course have an obligation for newly incorporated municipalities to transfer state land, 10% of the unused, unappropriated state land to the newly incorporated municipality. So in our discussion, for example, with the local boundary commission for newly incorporated boroughs or cities, that's a responsibility of the state, and the Department of Natural Resources is the responsible party for making those transfers. Of course, it's not a easy process necessarily because of surveying requirements and title research and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my concern is in hearing the LBC presentation the other day, and they're talking about incentives, and I don't think it's an incentive if you don't receive ownership to the lands that you apply for. I believe there's some boroughs out there. I was looking at the list, like Northwest Arctic Borough, 285,000 acres entitlement and got zero. I know Yakutat in my district is 17,000 coming to them, and they're the newest one. They only have 1,000 granted. And I guess if people want to apply and become a borough, I think it's a lack of incentive if you don't have the asset base there to work off of. And I think it's a disincentive. So, well, the reason I'm asking is we're trying to find out so we can bring the people in here to find out where the blockage is. I think if you're going to encourage people to form, you best follow through and be able to give them the land. If it's a federal government, then maybe we need to work with our delegation to get the land transfers. So, you know specifically who in DNR that we would talk to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thomas, I am assuming that the Division of Lands would be the responsible party. However,
we could find out from there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I just may tag along in this discussion here, when we're looking at the sustainability of communities in Alaska, rural Alaska, and the question of locally generated revenues always comes up. And where are you going to generate those revenues from? One, you can develop the revenues from natural resources. Two, you can look at a sales tax. Or three, you can look at maybe a property tax. But what we lack is an availability of private land in Alaska, in rural Alaska. And Representative Thomas's question is a very good question because it is the key to the sustainability of all of our communities in Alaska. Is there a private tax base to support these communities? And land is very central to that discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a final comment. I was involved in the Migratory Bird Commission, who initiated the CDQs, and I think that's probably, to me, about the most exciting project to come along. And I'm happy that the governor and your division is there, because I think with the loss of jobs, I've heard reports of upwards of 300 people leaving the villages through this IFQ program. First thing you do when you lose your job in logging, which they did lose, you know, the shutdown the industry, is they started selling their liquid cash, and those IFQs were cash. And I've seen them go from anywhere from $3.40 to as high now to $16 is what I was offered for mine. And then that creates an exodus of the people from the villages, and they're shrinking. So I think that your program that you have now, hopefully we can get some loans out there to bring the people back to the villages. And because they do have those sideboards that they can't leave and they have to be residents. And I think that's, to me, it's more exciting, or as exciting as the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was at the time. And I think this could have far-reaching consequences, positive ones. So, and I appreciate you coming in here today. Again, I see why I want to sit on here, because you touched so many of the things that I've you know, have watched through the years. And to realize they're all consolidated here is even better. And I know many of your staff, because I've talked with them through the years.
They're all very competent, very nice people, and if they aren't, then let me know.
I wonder if we might hear from Ms. Gay. It sounds like she's been real busy the last year. Maybe if she could give us a 5-minute update on what she's been up to.
Do you want me to step aside, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, no, you can. No.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Olson. I'm not prepared to make a presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think we're going to come back in front of you on another occasion and do an actual presentation on ADA and AEA. But if you had
we can do it at that time.
Okay, and I'll drop by and talk to you a little bit more afterwards. Thanks.
Well, I wonder if we had to talk to you.
Yeah,
any further questions for the
Mr. Blanchford? Mr. Blanchford, you've been involved in the process for quite a while now, and it's such a wide range of things. If you were to be king for a day, what would you ask the legislative body to do to provide you with the tools that you need to do your job?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Newman, that is that's a good question. Why don't I start with the answer and we break for dinner? You know, seriously, Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, I am a firm believer in local control, in local people having the opportunities to grab or to seize the local resources, the local opportunities, and I have a great deal of faith in Alaskans, and in every program where Alaskans have taken control. And Mr. Representative Thomas mentioned the CDQ program, and for a $250,000 state investment, where the responsibility and the accountability is moved from government, whether it's in Washington, D.C. or Juneau, move to local people. They take the opportunity and they use their own entrepreneurial spirit to look at ways of maximizing the benefit of to the local people. And the state's role in all of that, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Newman, is simply to look over their shoulders and to say, we discourage the outward migration of capital and the outward migration of employment opportunities. Yes, there is some leakage, yes, but we discourage it to a great extent. But where you have local people sitting on the boards of these CDQ groups, where the heart and soul of the region is still in the organization, I think that's key. And I would move government to as many local folks as possible. That would be the way that I would do it, you know, but that's a philosophical question that maybe I should not have touched on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to let you know, Commissioner, we are going to, the co-chair and I have got language to reauthorize the ARDA system, and we'll probably hear that shortly. And also was a request to fund some additional things, and so we are in touch with Lance Miller here in Juneau, so we are going to go ahead, and we're waiting for the bill to come back from drafting.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if at any time you need assistance in the development of policy discussions or assistance in your legislation, the department would be quite happy to be there.
Mr. Chair.
One last one.
Thank you very much. I actually had a couple questions that came from the discussions that I wound up having this interim. And it was in talking with administrators of local government, many times they would have lists of things that they wanted to do, and in fact, it was very interesting to me just how richly diverse those lists of ideas were. And I kind of wonder, and I celebrate your emphasis on the local, because it really is, to me, it seems it needs to be bottom up rather than top down if we're really going to ever succeed, because each of these communities appears to be very inventive and very pro survival, you know, in a really neat way. How does that play? How do those things that each of those are communities get prioritized in what you do? And then I have a second question on transportation, which normally wouldn't apply here, but it does in my question. Yes. Sorry.
How do we prioritize our efforts? And, you know, this relates to Representative Newman's question and to the co-chair Bill Thomas's concern. What we do is we look for that local initiative. Is there someone in the community willing to take the lead? Is there someone in the community or some organization that is going to generate the momentum? We can come in and assist with technical advice. And we can open some doors, but we can't open all the doors. But the local people have to own the idea. It cannot be our idea, because if it's our idea, then it's seen as the government's idea, and therefore it's kind of like people are forced to accept that idea. And in no way are we going to tell people what to do. What we will do is we will work with them, but they have to own the idea, and they have to have... they have to generate their own momentum. And once we see that there is momentum there, that people are willing to make the dedication to that effort, then we'll jump in. I mean, we will really jump in. And some of the local government initiatives around the state, you know, we enjoy, the department enjoys being part of a team that's willing to, that sees the future. And the bottom line of all of this is we realize, and Madam Representative and Mr. Chairman, that this is a very small state. There's less than 700,000 people in the whole state. It's an incredibly wealthy, wealthy state in terms of what we have in the permanent fund and what we have in natural resources. But where we need to come in is to really instill the entrepreneurial spirit of Alaska to where people would take their own initiative. And once we see that entrepreneurial spirit start to percolate, we get very excited and we jump in, and that's why the CDQ program is so exciting to us. I hope I answered your question.
And then, Mr. Chair, the follow-up question would be, one of the things that sort of was puzzling to me that, and I know these are different departments, but some of the transportation suggestions I had heard, for instance, the ferry system changes that would affect, and in that kind of instance where one suggestion of putting in resources, and I know this may be a sensitive subject, but so what? We will talk about it if we could. If it changes the whole nature of how communities work and the whole economic way that communities work, How does that play out? How can that play out?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Cisna, whenever there's changes in transportation links, whether it's air or road or water, the concerns will percolate from through the local governments into the state government, and we deal in this day and age, what we're dealing with is prioritization. You know. We look at, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just in transportation, in dealing with, again, the CDQ groups, looking at that economic activity, we can't have, And I speak only as the commissioner of a department that has a constitutional responsibility to play the role as an advocate for these communities. We can't have airports, top grade, full service airports in all the communities of Alaska, but we can move to kind of centralization of services, having high quality airports that serve regions or hub areas, and we're doing that with the CDQ program. And well, we're not doing it. The CDQ groups are doing it themselves. The CDQ corporations, they're looking at where to concentrate their activities and to serve as links to the smaller communities. Regionalization, and they're making the decisions. We're not. But when they make the decision, we step in and try as much as we possibly can to assist them. With issues like transportation on the highway system, that is an issue that I kind of shy away from. We work closely with the Department of Transportation, and Senator Torgerson is a great person.
Thank you again, Commissioner.
No doubt about it.
Thanks again, Commissioner. Yeah, we'll recess for a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Favorite commissioner.
Our next overview will come from Deputy Commissioner Tom Briggs of the Marine Highway System.
And former senator.
Tom's going first.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman, Representative Thomas, members of the committee. My name is Tom Briggs. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Transportation for Marine Highway System. I've been in this position just under 2 years, we feel that over these 2 years there's been a lot of hard decisions made, and we think that they're the right decisions, and we believe that they'll bear fruit for the residents of Alaska in the near future. I'd like to do a brief overview, very brief overview, rather than going through each component in detail and talking about what has happened in the past. We were under the impression, or I am under the impression, that you would like us to respond to some particular issues you might have, or issues that are dealing with the that we have going on with the Marine Highway System, and so I'd like an opportunity to do that, and then I'll open it up for questions. With me today is everybody's favorite former Senator John Torgerson, and John Torgerson is Special Assistant to the Commissioner, and he is our representative on the labor relations negotiations. As you know, labor negotiations is conducted by Department of Administration. Also with us today is Nancy Slagle, the Director of DOT Administrative Services, and Gary Kusha, Director of Administrative Services for Southeast Region, and our Legislative Liaison, Nona Wilson. The Marine Highway System consists right now of 10 vessels, soon to be 11, starting late spring of this year. The Marine Highway System operates over a coastal straight line mileage of 3,500 miles with 10 vessels. The running miles into all the ports and so forth is 8,800 miles. The Marine Highway System is the only Marine Highway System in the United States that's been adopted as a scenic byways by the Secretary of Transportation, Mineta. What does that mean for the system? It's mostly an attraction for tourism and an attraction for people who have access to that kind of information, the website, and as well as people who are trying to market the tourism in Alaska, and certainly the Marine Highway System is a very important aspect of the marketing of tourism in Alaska. Our primary directive under Title 19 is to provide basic essential service to the coastal community of Alaska and to provide economic stimulus to those communities and to all of Alaska as well. The Marine Highway System serves Alaskan communities by transporting passengers and vehicles between the communities as well as between Alaska and the lower 48. It's an alternative to the Trans-Canada Highway, Trans-Alaska Highway, excuse me. It is essential, becoming more and more essential now than it has in the past, because since 9/11, the restrictions on passing through Canada have increased more and more. And for that reason, we've done things like put more runs on between Alaska and Bellingham, because especially during the winter months when the military is traveling, it's critical that they have transportation. The Marine Highway System has 33 terminals from Bellingham, uses 33 terminals from Bellingham to Dutch Harbor on Alaska. And the Marine Highway, or the state of Alaska, owns 17 of those terminals. The other 16 terminals are owned by communities. For example, we go into the communities, especially on the chain, with the Tustamina, where we go to fish processing docks, city docks, and as well as any facility really that will provide us access. Generally speaking, we don't have to pay for a whole lot of the maintenance and upkeep of those facilities. They are managed by the owners. We are able to, in some cases, upgrade, receive federal dollars to upgrade terminals and facilities that are owned by somebody else if it's necessary. We're looking at several of those right now. The system is divided up into two basic components, and that, I mean, route components. There's Bellingham Southeast, and then from Cordova West. We have Southeast, you know, the first is called Southeast Ferry System, and the second is Southwest Ferry System. The Cordova West to Unalaska has increasing ridership, not increasing, and it's increasing faster than it is, believe it or not, in Southeast. The we carry about 300,000 passengers a year and about 100,000 vehicles. Unfortunately, our problem is that if we had all the dollars we needed, we would run all of our vessels year-round and have the most fantastic service to every community possible on the coast. That's not viable. We have received in the past about $40 million in subsidy on an $88 million budget, $86 to $88 million. It's about a 50% split on our total operating budget. We generate about half of our operating budget in revenues. We're a road system. We are an extension of the interstate highway system for the United States. It's a critical link. It's something that, although we do have a land route up through Canada, I think it's better for us from all kinds of bases to have our own ownership and control of our own highway system. And the uniqueness of our system is it's the only kind of its the only one of its kind in the world. There's nobody has a system like ours. 3,500 miles of coastline, 8,800 miles of route line, miles of route. And when you take the number of miles traveled between communities over the years. I haven't calculated that, but it'll knock your socks off. And it's critical to do that because we provide access to communities that are isolated. Probably the biggest challenge we have right now is Chinega Bay and Tetitlik. We would love to be able to provide them daily service with the fast vehicle ferry, the new fast vehicle ferry, Chinega, which comes online in May. They don't have the passenger ridership in order to justify daily service, certainly. And so we have planned, as we have in the past, to provide service twice a month of those communities. Chinega, for example, with about 70 village members, last year had 5 vehicles that they utilized the system. And it's difficult to build a ridership base and a system around those kind of numbers without major subsidy and without major support. We always are criticized for being frugal on the management of the system and cutting back the use of our vessels in the wintertime. We do have a planned service reduction in the wintertime, and we do that for two reasons. Ridership goes down, and we don't need as many vessels. We are also, during that time, every year we're required to put our vessels into an overhaul status, to comply with safety of life at sea, SOLAS requirements, as well as other Coast Guard certification requirements. So we have to go into dry dock, and those dry docks can take 6 to 8 weeks, depending. And you got to rotate all of the 8 vessels within that period of time. At the same time, we have capital projects. We have an aging fleet. Our vessels are, as you know, the system started with the first vessel construction, first 3 vessels in 1963. The second vessel, the fourth vessel, was the Tustamina in 1964. And then we've been replacing them slowly. We really haven't been replacing them. We've just been adding. This year, we've added 2 new vessels. We added the Fairweather, and we added the Lituya. The Lituya is a little shuttle service between Metlakatla Indian Community and Ketchikan. It's a very low-cost, low-impact type vessel. And then the Fairweather, of course, is a much higher level of technology and service. It's the running speed of about 35 knots, carries 35 vehicles and 250 passengers. It's a controversial vessel because it's a new technology. It's one of its kind. It was actually the first passenger vehicle fast ferry built in the United States. And it was begun construction several years ago, and planning and construction. It takes about 5 years from the time you start to plan until you implement a vessel and put it into revenue service. So that vessel was brought online last year, so 5 years before that is when they started working on it, about 1999. There's a second vessel, the Chinega, which will bring our components to 11 vessels, and we're not getting rid of vessels. We got rid of the Bartlett because the Bartlett was so far out of compliance with the current standards, certification standards, that it was cheaper to replace it than to try to upgrade it. And it was a slower vessel. It didn't have a lot of staterooms, and it was good for the Prince William Sound area. But we feel that the Chinega will be better for the Prince William Sound area, the Chinega being the fast vehicle ferry, the second fast vehicle ferry. I was hoping to talk to you a little bit about this year's budget supplemental for 05. We don't have the numbers, the final numbers yet. It has not been generated. At the appropriate time, I would like to be able to share that with you. Suffice it to say that the biggest issue we're faced with right now is fuel costs and rising costs. We've added vessels with no increase in our budget that's tied to those vessels. In other words, when we added the Latuya, we did not get a flat figure for adding the Latuya. When we added the Fairweather, we did not get additional dollars to add the Fairweather. We're adding the Chinooka. We're not getting new dollars for that. We're trying to do it within the budget that we have now, and we're always sensitive to the amount of money that the legislature has to give us to support it. Like I said, it's 50% of our 80, let's just say $80 million budget, $40 million a year. That's a lot of money. We understand that. But it is a road system. We put about $89 million into our roads, our land roads, just in maintenance a year. And, you know, the when you think about how critical, this is the only link to so many communities of Alaska for most of the year. It's critical that we continue to support it. As much as I would like to be able to reduce the operating budget, the subsidy from the legislature, I can't see in the near future that it decreasing. Some of the things we are doing that we feel is important to for the system to address is trying to do in a more aggressive marketing plan. We have prepared a marketing plan that is on the street right now, and we are going to ask the legislature at the appropriate time for support for that marketing plan. We feel that it's money well spent. We feel that, for example, we estimate for $700,000 in marketing, we could get back double that, certainly, in revenue, $1.5 million. When you talk about a $80 million operating budget most corporations, realizing we're not a corporation, we're a public transportation entity, but most corporations have 5 to 8% of their operating budget in marketing. We don't have that anywhere near that. We need to do better in the marketing. We are hiring a new marketing director. We're interviewing for a new marketing director right now. We're looking for somebody from experience in the private sector who has done a lot of transportation marketing would be our primary preference. We feel that but with this marketing effort, we can increase our ridership. We can do better for Prince William Sound with the Chinooka. We can do better with the Fairweather on ridership. And we can certainly promote the long hauls. Right now, we're running two mainliners from southeast all the way from Haines-Gagway to Bellingham every week. And that's to allow to build that ridership. You can't put those on immediately and have the ridership go up. It takes at least 2 years before the industry and freight industry, transportation industry, and the tour industry pick up on it. We feel that's a critical link. Some of the challenges I mentioned, and we will be addressing them more specifically in the supplemental request, is fuel, labor costs. We are still negotiating the labor contract, and John Torkelson is here today to speak to you about or answer any questions you might have about the labor negotiations. I know it's a very salient point right now to a lot of people because we have tied up the Fairweather. We've tied up the Fairweather in Ketchikan. The reason it's in Ketchikan is because it has to go into overhaul on February the 14th, and we had to get it to Ketchikan. That's where the overhaul is done, so we ran it down there and then tied it up. He will speak to you about the labor issues that and where we are and why we're there. Another challenge we had this year, which really impacted the state as well as the residents of Southeast Alaska, was the motor vessel Leconte when it ran up on the rocks. That cost the state about right off the bat $1 million, and that was the deductible. That cost the underwriter an additional $6.1 million. It cost the Marine Highway System in a non-budgeted expense, $1.2 million system. Because we had to bring another vessel out to service as well as, and that vessel could not go into several of the communities because it was a Taku, it was too large. And we had to contract with the private sector. We put out an RFP, we contracted with the private sector to provide service to those villages, and we did it immediately. We notified the unions we were going to do it, but we didn't negotiate it. We just went and did it because they needed services in the summertime. It was May the 10th when it happened, and they needed service. Especially in Angoon, Admiralty Island, the lodges were trying to gear up, get transportation, and bring in all their provisions for the summer. We had to get transportation. The unions filed a grievance, and I knew they were going to file a grievance because we ended up using a non-union service to provide that transportation. We had two contracts, one for passengers, one for vehicles and containers, and we went to arbitration. We lost the grievance and lost the arbitration. The effect of losing the arbitration is the arbitrator will rule as to whether or not there were any financial loss to the members. The employees. All the employees that worked on the Oconee just rolled into the rest of the fleet. So they never lost a day really of service unless they took leave. So it was an important thing to do. I knew we were going to get a grievance, and I knew we would probably lose it because the contracts say we cannot own, operate, or lease any vessel that's not operated by the union members. No union members applied for it, and so we had to provide it. And so I made that decision. It was my decision, so I'm responsible for that grievance. We do have a lot of projects we've been working on. We're confident that these projects, are going to help the system. It takes time. Less than 2 years is not enough time to turn it around. I still haven't been all the way out to Unalaska. The furthest west I've been on the system is Kodiak, and I've got to get out there. But it's, you know, and we operate out the chain with the Tustamina 6 trips a year is all. That's all we can afford. I would love to be taking the Kennecott out there once a week, and all the way from Homer to Unalaska. But the Kennecott, it's over $200,000 a week. Yes, $200,000 a week to operate. Some of the things that we've done that we feel are important, I've been very concerned about the cost of the Marine Highway System to the riders, to the residents of Alaska primarily. I remember I'm from Prince of Wales Island, and I used to go from Hollis down to Seattle at that time. For less than I can, with my family, a vehicle on a round trip, less than I can do it now one way to Bellingham. Prices have increased. We added 10% surcharge to the tariffs because of the fuel increase. Our fuel alone, we budgeted for this year 81 cents a gallon, and that was based upon the OPIS price at that time. And that we worked through Department of Revenue on coming up with that number. We budgeted 81 cents a gallon. It went over $1.62 a gallon. It's about $1.53 right now. We burn over 10 million gallons a year. So what that translates, right now average for the year is $1.53. That translates into over 70 cents a gallon more. You take that in 10 million, that's $7 million just in fuel. The labor contract is another issue, and like I said, John Torgerson will talk to you about that. We've done a rate study. The rate study is complete. We're going to implement these, the results of the rate study, which shows a little more equity throughout the system. Rates probably won't go down because compared to other ferry systems throughout the United States and other transportation modes, Marine Highway System is still a bargain. It's just not convenient for all uses and for all from all areas.
We've looked at reservations. We're interfacing with the Alaska Railroad Corporation, trying to determine if there is some efficiencies that can be realized by working with them. We've looked at a sail-to-rail program for tourism, and the railroad's been very responsive, and we've had one of their technicians down here reviewed our system and coming up with recommendations on how we can work together. Our reservation system is good. We got a great reservation team, and the railroad technician said we've got a great team. There are some efficiencies that can be realized. We would like to do it, like to be more inclusive. We would like to be able to work directly with our reservation office and the tourism industry so that we could be booking tours for, you know, from the ship, so that you could book a tour on the ship and go right into the tour as a service, and just enough to cover our costs to promote the economic benefit to those communities. Everybody from coastal communities has seen an increase in tourism and the eco-tours or whatever kind of tours that the communities are promoting. We've developed cost centers on a ship-by-ship basis. We didn't know what it cost, the real cost to operate a vessel. We know now. And it's we're budgeting by those cost centers. John Torgerson has, at the commissioner's request, has taken on a study of overtime. Our overtime is about 170,000 hours of overtime a year. And that's over $5 million a year, just in overtime. What does that mean? That study is going, we just input the data, we're coming up with the conclusions, we're going to be taking it to our managers and asking them, we're going to review it and ask them, how do we reduce overtime? One of the things that may come up with is that to increase the number of staff, because people are doing double duty, line tying up the lines when you go into a community and so forth. So overtime reduction is a priority. We still feel that just by adding a few, even if it called for adding more crew, we feel that it would be more efficient and save us a lot more than the $5 million we're spending on overtime right now. Starting February 1st, we're doing a three-month dispatching. It doesn't mean a lot to you, but that's a new project. They've been talking about doing it for years. They were unable to do it. They've been doing a week-to-week or month-to-month dispatch. And now there was no – the result of that contributed to dispatching. The inefficiencies of the dispatching contributed to overtime. We feel that by doing it 3 months in advance, it gives a little bit of surety to the employees' time. They can plan further in advance, and it should reduce the overtime. We've done a manning level report. We've asked that we look at the manning level of our vessel. Now, are we overstaffed or are we understaffed? Generally speaking, we're not overstaffed. And in some cases, we might have saved one or two stewards on one of the long-haul vessels, but we feel that we are, from an industry standard, we are in compliance. The Coast Guard has a level of manning for every vessel. Because we provide hotel and restaurant services, we're over that because we provide stewards that are not required by the Coast Guard. But we use them on double duty. They do a lot of the lifeboat drills and support for the safety compliance with the vessels. We've done an evaluation of our shoreside management. Are we overstaffed in our shoreside management? The study, which was done by the Department of Personnel, or Division of Personnel of DOA, said we're probably understaffed. They said we should be working swing shifts and be working 24 hours a day and on the port captains, and a lot of that stuff's not very feasible, but we're looking at it. And the other thing that we did, which had a huge impact on our operation, is that we moved the headquarters from Juneau to Ketchikan. Very controversial, and something that we felt strongly, almost intuitively, but we did do an analysis that it was the right thing to do. It has proven to be the right thing to do. We're still not complete with the move. All of our managers will be in one place, and they are interfacing with the shipyard. They're interfacing with the crew changes, and spend a lot more time dealing directly with the captains. We lay up our vessels, our southeast vessels, in Ketchikan. We man those vessels while they're laid up. We have security watch as well as a master. And one of the contract requirements is if you have anybody on there, you have to have the master. And then if you run the engines, you got to have a chief engineer. So, but those people are there, and they're being able to talk to our upper-level management. And it's a little early yet, but I think the efficiencies are going to be great. We lay up vessels. We used to lay the Bartlett up in Seward. The Bartlett, as you know, was sold by the Department of Administration on eBay. One of the things that I find is kind of cumbersome is a lot of the decisions that are made by other departments and negotiations, law, procurement are just some of the things that are really not under our control like they would be if we were like the railroad corporation, a little more all-inclusive. The challenges, as I mentioned earlier, that we have been facing with is adding vessels with no additional money. We've had to increase, one of the concerns we had is, are we going to have to increase our crewing, the number of employees? I forgot to mention our employees run from about 600 to 800, depending upon the season. 800 in the summertime, about 600. By adding those, the Fairweather and Lituya, and bringing on the Chuniga, do we have to hire from the outside? So far, we haven't. It's amazing. I always thought when you laid up added a vessel, we'd have to go hire additional people. There's enough in the pipeline that they're able to man the vessels, and that's encouraging. One of the service reductions, as I mentioned, is laying up vessels in the wintertime. That saves money. The demand is not there, although you would think that. Before I was with the Marine Highway System, I always thought the demand was there because we never had service in the wintertime. Right now, it's a real challenge without the fair weather in the system. But as I said, John Torgerson will talk to you about that. One of the things that we have been asked to do and we are trying to do is develop a two-year schedule. It's difficult to do the two-year schedule because you can't. In the past, we've said we can't do it because the legislature appropriates only every year, and you can't obligate future legislators. But I'm saying that we can do it, just put a qualifier in the schedule, a contingent upon availability of funds, or this schedule is subject to change depending upon whatever. It's difficult to balance the level of service needed with the increased cost. That's always a challenge. From the outside looking in, I thought, boy, that's going to be easy to fix. It's not easy to fix because there's too many variables, 9/11, labor contracts, fuel prices. Nobody has any control over those things. So you have to be able to be resilient and respond to them accordingly. One of the things that we feel is very important for us is to working with the Coastal Caucus that was of the legislature that was created, that was kind of proposed by Representative Jim Elkins and has been pushed Representative Thomas, and I would hope that I really look forward to that, and I think that's an important interchange with us, and I think that helps us get information to you as well as from you as to what the problem and what the solutions are. The governor, under executive order last year, created a Marine Transportation Advisory Board. He also created an Aviation Advisory Board, and he selected 12 members of the coastal communities to be on that Marine Transportation Advisory Board. They're only in an advisory status to the commissioner, but we work very closely with them, and they have been very helpful in getting from the community to the commissioner what the problems are and also getting the message back from us, from the administration to the communities. With that, I would like to have John Torgerson come up and explain to you where we are and why on our contract negotiations.
I think we're going to hold all the questions until after Senator Torgerson gets done speaking. But for the record, Representative Ledoux has joined us. Senator Torgerson?
Thank you, Chairman Olson and Chairman Thomas, members of the committee. I'll be brief on and then we'll stand for your questions. We basically are dealing with three maritime unions. For those of you who are not familiar with it, the International or Inland Boatman's Union, MMP, and MEBA. The master agreements that have been negotiated and agreed to for all three of those unions, the master agreements are fundamentally what the main fleet operates under. As a side to those master agreements, there are supplemental agreements which we are currently talking about that that we have not reached agreement on, and I listed those on the bottom of your worksheet. The master agreements basically call for a 7% wage increase for the members of these three unions. It would be retroactive to July 1, 2004. And then the succeeding 2 years is a three-year contracts. There would be a 6% increase for each one of the succeeding years. It also included health insurance benefits and other benefits that are normal to employees of government. The contracts that are still outstanding, this should probably refer to the supplemental parts of the master agreement that are still outstanding. And their only outstanding on MMP and MEBA is the Fairweather, the Lituya, and we haven't started at all on the Chinigo with any one of the unions. We're holding that off until we get the Fairweather completed. We've met with the unions on the Fairweather. As Commissioner Briggs notified you, the Fairweather is in Ketchikan. Commissioner Barton made a decision to tie the vessel up until we reached agreement on the labor contracts. The biggest sticky issue is whether or not we operate the vessels 7 days a week, 12 hours a day with two crews, or what the department would like to do, which is 4 days a week, 12 hours a day, and one crew. As you might tell, the amount of financial impact is substantial on that. On the winter time, we call them winter manning levels, and basically that's the main sticky point at this time. Is we don't, as Commissioner Briggs again stated, we were not funded to operate these vessels at the amount of subsidy that it requires right now, and so the commissioner decided to tie it up until we reach the agreement. With that, I'll probably just leave it lay there. The bargaining we did Monday and Tuesday, the state did declare impasse on December 27th on the contracts. We asked the Alaska Labor Relations Agency to order mandatory mediation. I have not, I understand they responded, but I have not read their response. Basically, I think it said they're going to have a hearing on it. In my opinion, we're still at impasse after the last 2 days of negotiations. But I will also tell you that the Division of Administration Labor Relations is responsible for the negotiating. I'm just a member of the team and representing management or representing DOT. So any legal issues or other things you'd really like to dig into, I would have to have Labor Relations come over and answer your questions on those. With that, I'll just wrap up and whatever questions I can answer, we'd be glad to do it.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I spent 3 weeks on the ferry system in Southeast this summer and was not on the LeConte, although I went by the LeConte, both on the rocks and in tied up for a dry dock. So I actually saw it in various... renditions, and I have pictures if you need any. I'm sure you have them. So I really got very familiar with the system, and I would highly recommend if any of you have not. I actually commuted back in the 70s between Kodiak and Anchorage, so I know the Tustamina very well, but not the ships in Southeast. And it really is an incredible system and an incredible experience. I can't say just how incredible that and the tie between wonderful little communities that are potential dynamos economically. I mean, it's obvious the potential is almost limitless if we do it all right. You know, it really is an incredible thing. But you talked about Chanika and the fact that you only had 5 cars last year. But if it was it 5 vehicles or was it 5 cars? Vehicles. But what about the other kinds of transportation? Because I was with me and my bicycle, and my bicycle was transportation in all these places that I went to. I would recommend that also as a neat way to travel. But did in the communities, in these smaller communities, is there a lot of foot traffic, or is it just some, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, in the case of Chanika and the smaller communities, 5 vehicles, and I don't know if that was a truck, or we can get that information for you, certainly, a trailer or what, or a container on a tractor. I believe they had around 140 passengers walk on. That's why we're looking at providing a lift that's $500,000 for both, for each of the 2 communities, Chanika Bay and Tutitlic, a lift so that we can put passengers on when they come into those communities. It doesn't match up to the Chanika. The terminals that we have now, there's not a variable ramp. I don't know if you've ever been to Chanika Bay or Tutitlic, but they are fixed ramps that the terminals were built with oil money after the oil spill, so they're fairly new terminals, and they were built for a specific use, side loading or stern loading with the Bartlett. And we can use them with the Aurora, that is the Aurora of the Lakani, the 235 class vessel. But there is foot traffic, and there's a need for transportation for these people. So we are providing that now. It's not the most convenient. We're running the Kennecott and the Tustamina into those communities, and I think we ran them in, I believe it was about 40 times last year, and we had 140. I can get you the exact numbers on our traffic report. I hate to quote a number. Something like that, with 140 walk-ons and 5 vehicles. So running, it's not economical for us to take the Tustamina or the Kennecott, which is a big ship, into those communities. That's why it'd be nice to be able to use the fast vehicle ferry, the Chanika, and we're looking at those lifts to accommodate those communities. John Torgerson and I visited both those communities and met with the communities and looked at them and had town meetings with Chanika Bay, and it was clear that if they don't get, they have to have transportation to sustain their lifestyle and that sustain their community and have a sense of community. All of us who live in Alaska know that transportation is critical to our way of life, social, economic, educational, and health. So we have to provide service to them. The type of service is the challenge. And we're looking at that, and I promised those communities we would look at a passenger access. And then we can bring those larger vessels in maybe once a month and pick up the vehicles. Or we could do it on what they call a whistle stop basis, where you get an order, you go in there and you schedule it, give them some lead time, just like you would do with a barge. And like some of the communities still use barges quite a bit, especially out the chain.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner, Senator Torgerson. Without revealing my age, I was one of the first passengers in 1963 to ride on the ferries, actually involved in the initiation and the maiden voyages as a Chilkat dancer out of Haines. And I know what it means to Southeast to have brought these in there, and I've developed many friends throughout Southeast playing basketball, traveling on the old mainliners. And so I know how important it is, and so my comments that I'm making up are mine, and also I call it the grieving communities to the north, who are very disappointed in the breakdowns with the unions, because they feel, and these came from 2 union guys that called me, no compassion for for the needs of the community have, who have about 35% elder community. There's, of course, we have need for prenatal care. They have to come to Juneau. And the disappointing, because there's no medevac services right now. And they're saying, why couldn't they pick a better time to pick? It seems like they always pick the worst time. They haven't had a plane up there for a week. So they're totally dependent upon the Alaska Marine Highway system right now. And so my phone's been ringing, not a lot yet, but it's going to ring more and more as this delay goes on. And one question I do have for you, though, and I have real compassion for the prenatal care, because the women have to come here and wait for 5 days to go back to Haines. And so, and they can't fly, they're advised not to. So that's a major concern, and the senior citizens. But my question is, you made a comment that when they shut the ferry, when the LeConte hit the rocks and you had to bring in ferries, I mean, private contractors, again, this just shows the incompassion, I guess, for the needs of the, again, probably all my communities, because they are the ones that were shut down. Is there any way that we can change legislative the contract where you don't get and end up with grievances with the unions when you have an emergency where you need to come in there? Because I think it's wrong that you get sued, because my communities need to be moved around. They need to be having their health care. They need to move in and out. And I think it's wrong that you get sued when you need to provide that service that people need. Can we? Maybe it's a question that the senator can have reviewed and get back to us and let us know. I would like to do where, put language in there that upon an emergency such as loss of a vessel, that you can have the authority without obligation. I mean, I think it's vital to these communities.
Mr. Chairman Thomas, I'd be glad to check into that. I could make some comments about how I think that that would be an automatic under emergency situations, that first and foremost would be to provide service. But I will pass that on to labor relations and let them respond through their legal counsel.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Briggs, Senator Torgelson. First, let me echo some of the words of Representative to my left. I had the opportunity to ride the motor vessel, or the marine vessel, Testamina down and got a tour of the boat. And was I ever impressed. That boat looked great for a 40-year-old boat. And you could tell that the people who run this boat are very, very proud of their boat and their jobs and what they do on board.
Yeah.
But my question is, can I get an opinion, or maybe your opinion as a commissioner of the ferries system, of the governor's proposed roads to Juneau? How will that affect the ferry system? Will it decrease any ridership or income or ports of calls?
Representative Newman, through the chair. I think that it'll reduce ports of call. And the reason I say that is because the plan on the Southeast Transportation Plan calls for, once the road to Skagway is in, it'll be a ferry across from Katsahin to Haines. Once that road is in, the ferries will turn around in Juneau. They won't go up Lynn Canal. So, oh yes, it'll affect it. I think the transportation link will be better for those communities. I think their access will be better, but the ferry experience, the only experience they'll have is if they go between Katsahin and Haines.
Do you feel this is going to be a positive effect in the ferry system? Or?
I think, Representative Newman, through the chair, I think that the road connect Juneau to the main road system is an important thing. I think it's good for the economy. I think it's good for access for the people of Juneau. What will it do to the marine highway system? I think that the impact of the marine highway system will be hard to measure. You know, at the same time as we're doing marketing and promoting and some other things to increase ridership, how do you measure the impact on a road that's is probably 10 years down the road, pardon the pun, But I think that the impact to the Marine Highway System traffic ridership will probably be negligible. And I say that because we'll be increasing the marketing to use the system, and we'll also be increasing service up in the southwest from Cordova west. And we hope to increase the ridership or the service out the chain at some point. How we do that still is the challenge. But I think that we will offset any reduced use of the Marine Highway by increased service in other areas, as well as increased ridership through our marketing effort.
Commissioner Briggs, Senator Torgerson, thanks again for joining us. And next meeting will be noticed this afternoon. And
okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.